I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
There should definitely be a name of a Storm that's just called Storm Don't Drive a Suzuki Jimny. Because
Jimny must be horrific in a storm.
Yeah, I've driven it in two storms, which is too many. And also, the other thing is you realise that it's like watching a very slow boat on a stormy day by the sea, going against the current. You realise it's got everything wide open, full throttle, and it's just not proceeding.
Well, like James May's shit dinghy.
Yes, it's like James May's shit dinghy. It's exactly like that, and I felt like that. And I was actually at the coast this morning. I woke up off of the coast, and
off of the coast, were you drifting listlessly through the North Sea?
Actually, to be specific, I was just off of the fucking coast because I was at Southend-on-Sea, and I thought it's extremely stormy and rather dangerous, so I went on the pier, which is the world's longest pier.
Yeah.
And I'd never done it before, and I took my son, and we went on a very rickety train, which genuinely felt like it was going to fall into the ocean. And I had a coffee this morning 1.3 miles into the ocean.
Is it 1.3 miles?
It's 1.3 miles. It's 1.889 kilometres, 1.3 miles.
Bloody hell.
I mean, it's just...
I had no idea it's that long. I've never been.
It's man-made lunacy.
Man-made madness. You should be pitching that to Discovery or someone. Johnny Smith's man-made madness.
Nah, Suggs would get that
Look
gig.
What these pricks did.
I wouldn't get that job. In fact, it's one of those ones of... it's the documentaries about how things are made in factories with Greg Wallace, isn't it, from MasterChef.
He runs around like a hyperactive egg, shouting at people. How's this working in? All right.
And the bloke's like, dude, this is the door handle that opens the door into the factory. You don't need to get too excited about that bit. But come on in anyway.
Just let me stop you there, Greg. Unfortunately, because you spoke so loudly over this vat of fondant, we've got to throw it all away, so there's going to be no cream eggs this year, you prig. Well, sorry, mate. Oh, no, no. That's delicious.
We've gone into a factory that makes tyres. I've just opened the door. I can't believe how many tyres are in here. Well, it is a tyre factory. So on the basis of it being a factory that makes solely tyres, I'd say you're going to expect a lot of tyres today. Yeah?
What's going on in here? Making tyres? Yes, that's exactly it. What? That's mad. Thanks for your insightful commentary, Greg.
It's not. If you'd read the crib sheet, Greg, it's not really that bad. It's just exactly what we were expecting. Who are you?
All I do in here is make pine furniture. That's unbelievable. Well, it's not, though, is it? I mean, it's quite comprehensible when you think about it.
Oh, can you imagine a day in the life of Greg Wallace? He turns up at like a piano shop and he goes, I can't believe all the stuff you do with pianos. Well, that's what all we do. We don't do anything else.
What? You could play any song on this? Like any song. Just name a song. You could play it on it. Well, not me personally, but a pianist could. What, a pianist? There's people called pianists. What's that? That's mad.
It's like Joey Essex, but anyway, I like
people,
Greg,
who find everything about the modern world slightly incomprehensible and amazing. I mean, it's quite sweet in a way, but
it is. I was going to say there tiring. Is a charm.
There's a tiring to live with, I'd imagine. What's this? Eggs on toast, scrambled. You scrambled them. How do you scramble them? What's this? You put them on the toast. That's mad.
What's going on? I'd like Greg Wallace. Do you know what? If Greg Wallace was on EastEnders every episode, I'd watch EastEnders because it would bring some positivity and brightness to an otherwise gloomy bastard show.
What if he just walked into every scene just going, what's going on?
You walk in, but what's going on with... But high intonation, what's going on? What's going on? And then he'd go, oh, look, like, so hang on a minute. You're in deep debt, but it's okay. You'll get over it. You're spending too much money on alcohol. You need to come with me. Let's have a celery smoothie and we'll go for a little run. You, over there, the one that looks a little bit rough. No offence, love, but you do. He'd just go around and, like, micro-analyse people in a really jolly, shallow way.
Has Greg Wallace got a VTech voice? I think he might. Because he's got a sort of high bit and then he's He's got.
He's two stroke power band, isn't he? He's sort of 90s foreign holiday hire motorbike, isn't he? You know, where they're just a little bit, because Spain being Spain, where they really love motorbikes, they're very passionate. They always err on the sort of like, of course it's too much power and it's going to be a little bit out of hand, but that's the way we like it. Let's hire it to some foreigners. Yeah. So hang on,
one do you want? Do you want the 11 horsepower one or the 49 horsepower? Oh, 49, please. Are you sure? It only weighs as much as a shoe. 49. And then some pissed people on a stag do accidentally ride one into the sea.
Oh, that... It's almost like the Spanish go, do you know what? Listen, we've got a great idea here. We're not going to make any money from this business, but someone's going to come along and go, I just want a 49cc thing that gets me from the villa in the morning where I'm hungover to the beach, and then I'll park it all day with a towel on it, and then I'll ride it home at 26 miles an hour. They'll be like, no, do you know what? For the same amount of money, we'll give you a 250 XGP two-stroke bike and you can have what looks like a horse riding helmet that's been kicked down a flight of stairs. Yeah. Go on, have a go on that. By the way, wear flip-flops, don't wear anything else. All right, job done.
Oh, just to be sure, you are going to ride this shirtless, aren't you? Oh, yes. Yeah, no problem at all.
That's
excellent.
Good, just checking.
I am the king of Spanish scooter rentals and there are two things I hate. The British... and the British. And so I want to take their money and then hurt them. You shirtless man, ride like the wind on my 250cc death machine.
Shirtless man. I have to say, there is a charm to that. I have done a bit of that in the past. And
have you?
Frankly,
I'm too chicken to do that.
I don't know how I've survived, but I definitely don't do it anymore. It was back in the day, Rich.
Back in the old days, back to the old school. There's a bloke I used to know who went to Thailand, I think, and he went to a scooter rental shop, and there's a load of them just picking up their scooters, and the guy came to him and went, do you know how to ride one of these? And this bloke, he was called Neil, said, oh, yeah. And I went, show me. You need to show me that you know what you're doing on this before I let you go.
Oh, gosh.
So Neil, almost theatrically, almost like a stuntman going, I won't be needing this, handed the guy his crash helmet.
Oh, shit.
He rode off up. There's a street that ran straight up in front, like away from the rental shop. So he rode up the street a little bit. He turned around. He stopped. He gave a cheery wave to the rental man. And then he pinned it open. And it went careering down the street. He realised he, for some reason, panicked. He couldn't shut the throttle off. And he just went straight through the front window of the hire shop.
You're joking. He went...
Yeah, he got really banged up. Like, he came back from Thailand with both his hands and forearms all in plaster.
He went through the front of the hire bike shop.
Even he was able to admit, in retrospect, it must have looked really funny. Because he handed the helmet to the man as if... the great Neil has no need of that. And then rode up the street. The cheery wave, he said, was probably the mistake.
That was a terrible idea.
It was misplaced confidence. And then, he absolutely pinned it open and couldn't stop. And he went through plate glass window.
I don't think I can compete with that. I mean, I've seen people doing... You know when drifters do one hand out of the window to prove that they've got full car control with one hand? I've seen that. I've seen people obviously doing that for the first time, and it slightly overcooking the situation. And it's always in a crowd, we know, like Mustangs leaving coffee-based activities, and it's horrible because you know they need the other hand. They need that other hand, and it all happens too late. There's too much wheeling going on and flailing. And indicator stalk snapping. And
it's funny, isn't it? But in the mere nanoseconds in which that hand is suddenly required and the owner of the hand realises that, it's too long, isn't it, to pull it back in through the window
It
on the wheel. And you're just going to like sort of that hand will come in and then just get sort of like the ends of your fingers will just get twatted by the fast rotating spokes. And
it will do. You break all of your knuckles. Yeah, it's just a terrible thing. I wanted to say sorry to listeners for not appearing in the last podcast. Honestly, it's not like we had some sort of like creative falling out or I don't know. I refused to go on tour when you wanted to go on tour or anything.
You just refused to come out of your dressing room until someone had peeled all of the opal fruits in your rider.
That's right.
And the wrappers on them. And, of course, it's bound to kick off.
Yeah, it didn't all kick off. It's
oh, you know what he's like when he's not had his Starburst.
It wasn't like that. It was just a perfect storm of you having a lot on, me having a lot on, and not being able to align, I suppose.
Yeah.
And
it's given our joint standards of organisation, it's a miracle it hasn't happened before. I felt like it was going to happen again this week, but
I felt that too. Yeah, I agree.
Of stuff. Yeah. Well, anyway, I held the fort as best I could by just crapping on about my Range Rover. So.
Thank you, Rich.
Some people asked when you're going to do a solo show, so I guess maybe at some point you probably should to then sort of, you know, level things out somehow.
Is it a bit like when Simon and Garfunkel used to, like, one used to go off stage when the other one did Bridge Over Troubled Water or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Humpback Bridge Over Backwater Lanes. In fact, I did do that once in an e-golf with my children in the car. And, I thought the front struts were going to come through the bonnet. It was not my finest hour of driving.
You've mentioned this before, possibly on a video or maybe on a podcast, but you didn't mention the car because you didn't want the people who owned the car to know about it.
Well, Volkswagen don't listen to this podcast. It's absolutely
they
fine.
They probably don't.
I did give it a really good checking over. I was convinced that the wheels were octagonal. I convinced I'd had four blowouts simultaneously because it was so loud, the landing. And, I was convinced that things had gone very, very sour. But it was all fine. It's all fine.
I had that once going a bit of a lick across a big junction where there's sort of, you know, where sort of one main road crosses another and there's lights and we'd got the green light. So I just went for it. You know, we arrived, the lights were on green. So it's just like, you know, you do that kind of thing where sort of, particularly when you're young and idiotic, which I was at the time, just went, I'm not going to stop if it starts to turn red. So I just floored it in a quite powerful four-seater convertible from a well-known German manufacturer. And I had three mates in the car as well. We got the roof down and we were just being twats. And, you know,
were you DSG tromboning in said vehicle or not?
Well, it would have been an automatic. And it was this was quite a while ago. This was like in the early 2000s. But I don't think things tromboned that much back then. I think it was a V8. It would have been a V8. Anyway, this is not the point. You know, sometimes where two major roads meet and then, but one of them will then sort of, there's almost a hump as you drive along where the crown of the other road you're crossing is.
Oh, yes.
And so we sort of, there was a bigger than expected crown and the car didn't take off. What it did do is just bottom out really horribly. And there was the sound of the bottom of the car meeting the top of the road in a really, really ugly way. You don't know what to do after that. So I sort of stopped and had a little sort of cautious peer underneath. And it's like, right, I can't see anything dripping or hanging down.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say it's okay.
Nothing hanging down. I love that. Yeah. It's but like major track rods that control the steering and things like that.
But but in truth, it probably just sort of put an enormous crease in the floor pan and probably like pancaked a major part of the exhaust or something that I couldn't even see. But it's okay. You know, no lights came on. I always think that's when something like that happens and then lots of lights come on the dashboard, you know you're in shit then.
Yeah, that's true. Or the airbag goes off. Yeah. I've never had that. I've never had an airbag go off. I've never experienced airbag face.
But they do test for that, don't they? There's a lot of testing goes on to make sure that airbags don't go off if you just twat into a curb at speed or something idiotic like that.
Yes.
There's a great video, actually, of VWs from about sort of 20-odd years ago, maybe, of VW just doing a load of that. And it's things like just an old, like the original New Beetle, one of those, just being driven into an enormous mound of gravel.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you seen this?
Yeah, I've done that before.
What? Driven into an enormous mound of gravel
I did it in an Opel Corsa, actually.
What?
It wasn't a hire car in Spain, but it was at the test centre in Chamonix. I did it for fifth gear. When I first started out on TV, it was one of my very early jobs. I had to do a bore strike, I think they called it. So they had a dummy bore that you had to drive into, and they gauged the severity of the impact. And then I had to drive into a huge mound of gravel, and then there was one other really weird, and it was mostly for calibration of airbag to decide, was it worth the airbag going off for this? Which is a lesser known Pet Shop Boys song, I'm pretty sure. But it was actually quite exciting. I mean, I did ruin three courses intentionally.
Yeah. And then were you just wearing a normal seatbelt?
Yeah, completely. I was wearing a T-shirt as well.
I was just going to pop on my safety T-shirt. So is it not quite uncomfortable twatting into a pile of gravel? Because you must stop pretty sharpish.
Oh, yeah, and the sound is awful. Because it was quite coarse gravel, you know, like roadstone, I suppose you'd call it. Mm. It was a big mound of roadstone, and the car fully ingested it. I think they had to pull it out with a crane. I can't remember what speed we were doing. We had to do all these things at quite a specific speed. I had a German chap in the passenger seat with me. But I remember the bore strike being quite a little bit more severe than I was expecting, because I didn't know how much bores weighed, because this thing was the weight of an average bore. And they're like badgers. They're sort of roided badgers, really. They're really heavy, and they have, because of course they're quite low, they go right in at radiator height. They're totally wreck radiators. Proper radiator wreckers. Aside from the fact they lose their life usually as well, which is not ideal, but... Yeah, it was that was quite heavy going, and once I'd hit it, it rolled down the road forwards so far, it just kept rolling. I did an emergency stop straight afterwards, and it kept rolling.
Yeah, it didn't come up and twat the windscreen or anything.
I don't think it did. I remember it just sort of like pinballing out of the rad and back down the road. I'd love to look it up. I think it was 2006, 2007. I did this ages ago.
I was just reading about, you know, elk and the famous elk test in Sweden, which tripped up the Mercedes A-Class. Because I've seen pictures of Saabs being tested with, I think, a mock elk. And I guess because that's taller.
Yes.
And their legs are quite spindly.
Yeah.
So the car sort of chops their legs from under them, and they just fall onto the car, and then they're coming up over the bonnet and the screen and smashing onto the roof.
Yeah,
and that can be
pillars.
Quite bad. Yeah. If it comes to the screen at you, you're going to get smushed by massive elk. But apparently elk strike is made worse because elks have really shit peripheral vision, and they can't work out, you know, if a car's coming towards them, they don't instinctively go, uh-oh, and get out of the way. But also because elk have a drink problem, because they drink, they eat highly fermented fruit, and it makes them a bit pissed.
Ah,
and
brilliant.
Apart from the fact they can't see the car coming, even if they do, they're just like, oh, hi, you know, and
so they step to the left a bit, but they have gauged wrong, so they basically step right into the way of the car.
Yeah, they're idiots, basically. Drunk idiots.
We've all been there. We've all been there. No, the elk test is quite... Elks have claimed the lives of a lot of motorists, actually. I'm sure listeners of this podcast who are from Scandinavia can vouch for that. You don't want to mess with an elk. That's why they have those... We've said it before on a previous video or podcast. That's why they sort of Scandinavian optional extra spotlights on Volvos and stuff like that. There's usually four of them, isn't there, on the grill, and the two outer ones point slightly out towards the hedges, and that is so that you can see if an elk is in the hedge or running towards the road, and you've got a bit of notice to sort of change your speed or your trajectory.
But I noticed when I was up in Arjeplog a couple of years ago that more modern cars, they seem to have switched to those light bars.
The LED slimline bars.
Yeah, exactly.
Which are good, but I mean, they're far better in terms of vision. They just don't look quite as good, do they?
I don't know. I quite like that kind of high-tech look. It depends on the car, though.
Well, talking of which, I was going to say, I've been tooling around this week in the Alfa Romeo Juliet Quadro Foglightio.
Did you borrow this because we were talking about it, or is this a coincidence?
It's because we talked about it, because I suddenly realised I've not driven that damn car, and it's been out several years, and it looks splendid, as we spoke about. But I just thought, I've got to just see whether it's all good or not. And I haven't done that many miles in it yet. And I got it, well, all the days since I've got it have been stormy and damp and very cold. So, and first thing I can tell you is that the traction control is as laid back as a sort of an Italian jazz singer. It's so squirrely.
Yeah, is it as laid back as the traction control on that VXR8 that I used to have?
You'd
be fully sideways, and then the car would sort of go, "Oh, mate.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a bit of a slide on here. Do you want some help with that?"
That's exactly what it reminded me of. It's that proper, like, "Oh, you've stepped out. Oh, hang on. Oh, I'm supposed to have done something. Okay, here I go.
Shuffling
I'm gonna do
papers.
It. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I've done it.
Sorry, mate. I popped out for a cigarette. What's going on? Shit. That looks bad. Can I,
can I help you clear that up?
Yeah. Break a wheel or something? I can't remember. Hang on, there's a manual around here.
It's very much like that. But there's a couple, apart from the driving dynamics, I haven't explored fully, shall we say. But what I can tell you about, it's got some very interesting quirks, which I don't know if this is general Alfa Romeo, because I've not driven enough of them, and there's not that many models out, is there, these days? But
no,
it does several things which I thought the only person in the world that might appreciate this observation is you. One of them is, and at first this made me livid, but now I'm finding it quite charming, is that every time you turn the car off and turn it back on again, it will not start the car up with the infotainment on. No radio, no infotainment, nothing. And I don't know if it's a setting which someone preset prior to me driving the car, but basically every single time you start the car up, there's a completely blank screen in the centre console, and you have to hold your finger down on the sort of like infotainment button to strike everything up.
That feels like a fault, though, doesn't it?
It feels like a fault, but at the same, it pissed me right off when I first got the car. I thought, what's going on? I was listening to the radio. The sat nav was on. Why is it suddenly all not on? But I'm wondering whether it's an Italian decision to just go, do you know what? You've bought a car with an interesting sounding engine. It's quite intenso. You've got the start stop button on the steering wheel for sure. Why don't you just listen to the car for a bit and drive the car maybe for the first couple of minutes without any distractions? And then you can introduce a bit for Damon. So there's that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then something that's a bit 90s on it is every time you open and close the car, or lock and unlock the car, should I say, it bleeps twice really loudly.
Oh, man.
Really loudly.
Drives me nuts. And that's an FCA thing. Hopefully Stellantis will quash it now. But the Jeeps, the Jeep Renegade, which I thought was quite a nice little car in many ways.
Yeah, I don't mind the
Renegade.
It
does that. And I looked and looked and I couldn't find a way to turn it off. And it turns out that in later Renegades, you cannot turn it off. And it's infuriating. And one day I'd gone to see some friends. And I left their house at sort of like 11:30 at night. And they live on quite a, you know, little terrace street in London. And you can't get into it without going, bip, bip, and you just go, you twat, waking people up, rude. And I think, I remember now that I think when we borrowed some Quattro Formaggio Giulias for the Grand Tour, they did that.
Four cheese
and they all
Giulia.
Had. I'm pretty sure we borrowed like two or three, and they all had weird little glitches with them. One of them, the alarm kept going off.
Which is nice.
Again, a very sort of that's a kind of an 80s fault, isn't it?
That's
a classic 80s fault where you sort of got to run out in the middle of the night and close all the air vents to try and stop the ultrasonic alarm going off.
It's textbook sort of maladjusted Clifford aftermarket, you know, Joyride era alarm system. And you're like, oh, is it really being nicked, or is it just like had another hissy fit in the wind again?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, it is. Just, oh, it's too breezy out here. Blah, wah, 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 wah. Yeah, I can't stand that. I remember having a week with one of those Renegades and going, I like this car, but I could not have one because that bip bip thing just drives me nuts.
Well, just like you said, I was going to say, the only time it bothered me was I had to leave the house really early. And it and it would go, meh, meh, like that as soon as you got in the car. Like, that's louder than the exhaust, because it hasn't actually got... It hasn't got a very loud exhaust note until you put it on kind of like race or dynamic or, you know, hairy chest mode. So you can actually start the car up and be quite considerate, neighbourhood watch spec, but you can't unlock it or lock it in a polite manner. So that's a bit of a Brian. And the last thing is, again, I'm chuckling because it's probably just an Italian. It's got heated seats, right? Obviously, it's pretty cold at the moment, and I'm a wuss. And I put the heated seat on. I put it on one, and it was like I couldn't even feel it for about after 10 minutes. I said, it's not on. Put it on two, and it made a very, very slight difference. You know, like we're talking 5% increments, maybe. And then I put it on number three, which on a lot of cars, that's proper, you know, poo cooking central. And this one, after like half an hour with number three on, it was at best lukewarm, I would say, at best. So I think it's a case of the Italians have just gone, listen, you don't need heated seats. We've put them in because you allegedly want them, but you don't need them. Because
the guy who runs our Swedish office keeps going on about them. I don't know why.
Yeah, but what does he know?
Why would you want heated seats when you live in Turin?
Exactly. Well,
it's just stupid.
Just need a really nicely tailored puffer jacket and some stylish shoes and just...
Yeah.
And actually, there's no heat at all. It's just one button, two buttons, three lights on the dash. That's all it is. And
maybe that's where the heat was coming from. It was the lights in the switch rather than the seats themselves. That sounds pathetic.
Yeah, it was. But I'm going to be driving it over the weekend and stuff to try and put some more miles on it. It's just it's such an interesting car, and it does make me feel very exclusive. I get in a C of 3 series and C classes and A4s, especially hot, you know, like hot Audis with the sort of massive oval exhausts, which aren't really there. When you follow them, you realise there's a tiny exhaust inside it, which is a bit like a massive penis sleeve over a small penis.
Well, yeah, it is. They're just stuffing their trunks. Yeah, dick
sleeve. it's just a dick sleeve. And I just think, in a world of all of that, that car, the Giulia, with its beautiful enamel clover leaves on the front wings and the carbon fibre inserts on the inside, it does look fantastic. It looks bloody
I've only
brilliant.
Driven it very briefly. I haven't had a long go in it, but I do remember it felt a bit like, you know, you could sort of tell, you know, when you've driven a lot of cars like we have in our job, you get a vibe from a car quite quickly.
Yeah.
And it felt, there was a good vibe to it. It felt quite special, quite nice, and...
Yeah,
I would have liked to have had more of a run in it to really see what it was like. But I also, when I see any Giulia around, and particularly a Quadrifoglio, I always just think, you, sir or madam, have made a choice there. You haven't got that car accidentally. You've gone into that knowing that you wanted not a Dick Sleeve Audi or a BMW or a Merc.
Hi, I'm Dick Sleeve Audi. Yes. Weren't they at South by Southwest Festival a couple of years ago?
No, I think they're Southern California's largest Audi dealer, aren't they? Dick Sleeve Audi.
Oh, of course they are.
Hi, I'm Dick Sleeve, Southern California's Audi specialist.
Dick Sleeve Audi.
So yeah, I report back next week. But I think it's everyone I know who's driven it extensively, absolutely loves it, including my sometime colleague TV's Jeremy Clarkson, who loved it so much he was going to buy one.
Oh well, that's good. But why didn't he?
I don't know. He was going on about it for ages, and I think he talked to Alfa Romeo and went, "No, seriously, I'll buy one off you." And then I don't know why the trail went cold, but.
Can you get him to?
Well, funny enough, I'm going to see him tomorrow, so yeah, I'll ask him.
Can you buy it in that incredible? I mean, this one is in the blue, the sort of electric blue that.
I can't
remember the Italian name, but the emeraldy green. Get him one in that colour, or just make him. I nearly said make him pull the trigger on that, but I'm not going to say that because that's just that's a Dick Sleeve
pull
Audi
back
move.
The bow on that one.
Yeah, pull out the foreskin and purchase that one. But no, seriously, he should do that. It's brilliant.
Talking of good colours, have you seen? You know that small Lexus that looks a bit like it could turn into a robot at any minute. It's very angular and it's got sort of almost like Gandini wheel arches on it.
Oh, the U, I mean? Is I it the U, the UT?
UX.
UX.
The UTD.
Yeah, UHT. No.
The UHT, that's right. You can keep it for ages and it won't go off, even out of the fridge.
That's true.
I'm going to have to look this up. Fucking useless car journalist I am. Jesus, I can't remember. I'm just losing my grip. It's called the U... Yeah, the U... Oh, no, it says... There's a picture of it on the homepage of the Lexus website, but it says "Welcome to Lexus UK." And I was about to go, "It's called the Lexus UK."
It's called the UK. It's called the Lexus UKIP, and it's for people that don't like foreign
the
muck,
UX.
But they've forgotten that it's Japanese.
It's called the UX, and it's sort of there's one that parks around the corner from my house, and. With familiarity, I've kind of gone, I quite like that. I think it's okay. It's got some weird bits on it. It's got like little fins coming off the back lights.
Yeah, it has. It has.
But it's, it's a bit interesting. And more than that, you sort of go, like the one I walk past, it is just like grey-ish. And it's got, you know, you just look at it and you go, the paint is obviously visibly really good on it and the doors are visibly really tightly shutting and you just sort of go, that's a well-made car, isn't it? Of course it is, because he's wearing Lexus. But I've noticed them around a couple of times. They do this really good sort of like almost military green. Have you seen this?
No. What, a UX in sort of olive camo?
It's olive. Olive, exactly. That's it, because it's not just green. It's like... So it's got that sort of
NATO spec,
NATO-y sort of feel to it. It's got a bit more sort of almost like a browny undertone to it. It's a really interesting colour because it's not just your normal sort of. I've just found it here on the configurator. It doesn't say what it's called. And I want to know what the colour
is. Is this satin or is this gloss?
No, it's gloss.
Okay,
that's the thing. They've not gone, you know, because I don't. I'm not. That's probably trying a bit too hard, particularly on a, you know, sort of small hybrid car. But it's. It's just got a sort of interesting tone to it. Which
isn't it a full EV?
I
can't remember. Is it?
There is an EV one, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's also a hybrid one.
Ah, okay. A bit like those things that you only ever see in London, the RX. The Lexus RX. It's a very sort of Larry David spec car, isn't it? You see lots of people around London who look like Larry David driving these.
That green is called Terrain Khaki.
I'm going to look
that up. Terrain is spelled T-E-R-R-A-N-E. Why is it spelled like that? I don't know. Terrain Khaki. It's khaki. Nice. I don't know whether I'd go all out. It's one of those colours where I admire someone who's specced it because it's not just silver or black or grey, but I don't know whether I'd be bold enough to do it because it's sort of whether one day you'd come out of your house and go, Oh no, I've actually gone off that.
One of those in the coupe with the spider's web grill might look good.
Yes.
Mightn't it? And it might be two fingers up to the kind of, the dick sleeves in Audi.
Yeah, again, well, it is because you're going, no, I didn't want a dick sleeve, I wanted something else. Yeah. I almost persuaded. Well, I say almost. A mate of mine was about to buy a second-hand but recent shape BMW M3. And in fact, he has. He's got a really beautiful spec. Nice colour, kind of blue, and it's a handsome car pre the piggy grill. And but he was like, I think I'm going to do this. I can't think of anything else to get that sort of do what I want. And I just remembered the Lexus GSF.
Yes,
and
saw one last week.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I did. Genuinely.
They're quite rare, aren't they?
Yeah, I was. Sorry to sort of jump onto your chat, but yeah, I was charging late at night outside a really cool kind of diner motel called Molly's in Oxfordshire.
Okay.
And as I was charging and I was doing a few emails and ting, this thing came across from the other end of the car park, like a long car park, towards me, and I thought, I can hear it as well. Oh, is it? I don't know what it is. Couldn't make it out because it was night time and it was bright lights, and it was one of them. And I thought, I've not seen one of those for ages. Really like it. And the bloke properly.
I'm not sure I've ever seen one on the road.
Yeah. It was. I think it's a cool choice. In fact, I've seen two. I saw one in Milton Keynes being driven very aggressively around a car park outside the Snow Dome. Because do you know what it is? I know exactly what the story. I could tell. It was a guy and his family. and when there were two children in the back, and he was doing what I was doing. He'd arrived a little bit late for a session on the in the sort of the ski slopes, the indoor ski slope things.
Yeah.
And you've got to do all the faffing of getting kids into the snow gear, and obviously you don't want to miss your hours slot or whatever it is. And he'd got stuck in traffic like me, and I bet he'd arrived at the car park and the car park was full. It was one of those like 500 space car parks where there's probably two spaces spare, but you haven't got any idea where they are. So you might as well run into a maze and someone tells you, oh yeah, somewhere in this maze is a landmine. Yeah, just don't go near it. You're like, whoa. So, and he was in first, or he was holding it on the auto box, and he was just ringing it round this car park. You could tell, gnashing his teeth, going, the kid's just got to go and do the snow dome thing. I've got to park this damn car. It was natural. We've all been there. I bet you.
Yeah, oh yeah. But somehow, I feel like if you're in an aggressive car, it makes you somehow angrier at that point.
Oh, completely. Completely.
It's just... I had to do... You know, I was saying to you the other day that... like, not on the podcast, but with the, I had to come back from over West England late at night, and I just wanted to get home, and I merged onto the M4, and it was very quiet, and I was in my Porsche, and I just matted it, and then suddenly realised the speed that I'd got up to, and went, oh my god, eased right off.
Yeah.
And I was just like, just keep it together, don't be silly. But then I just kept speeding up, and I was like, fuck, and I think I've got to go back next week, so I've got to go do another trip down the M4. And I was like, I'll bring the Range Rover, because it won't encourage me to drive like an absolute ring piece. I hope it won't, because it's just softer. When you've got a car that's a bit, rah, 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 let's go, it's too easy to just be a bit of a bell.
It's like a dog walk with a dog that just wants to pull on the lead and just kind of like make you break into a run at every available opportunity. Whereas a dog which is quite happy to just sniff walls that have been previously pissed on and then waddle here and there. You know, that's the difference, isn't it? You've got to be in the right mood.
Yeah.
Got me the right mood.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the GSF, I suggested it to my mate, and he did sort of go, oh, he's a car guy, so he knows his stuff. And I double checked. I went, I seem to remember that like people I know whose opinions I respect about cars, like Richard Meaden and Jethro Bovington and people from Evo, they all really loved that car, and Clarkson loved it as well. You know, it's like definitely had something to it, and I've never driven one. But I suddenly... So I sort of... My mate went, oh, okay, yeah, and then just went and bought the M3.
Oh, but I wish he'd bought the GSF now.
I know. Well, I've just looked. There are two for sale at the moment on Auto Trader. That's it. There's only two. They're both blue. The cheaper one is 38 grand, which... And it's, what, 5 years, 6 years old. It's quite a lot of car. For that, I suppose. I mean,
well, there'd be BMW have had engine reliability issues on their hot M Sport stuff for quite a while now. I know I've had people with all sorts of engine bearings shatting themselves, even when they've not been driven too hard. So, on the basis of all of that, I might go, do you know what? I just fancy being a bit like the Alfa Quadra Foglitio.
Yeah,
I'd just go the opposite way, go left field and just rock it with conviction.
Yeah.
Anyway, that Lexus is never going to go wrong. I know it's cliche, but it won't. It will be fantastic.
I feel confident that it'll be.
So no disrespect to your mate Rich, but he's bought the wrong car on that side of things.
Well, I mean, yes, but no. I mean, if he's happy with it, then that's all that counts.
He's
but...
too busy doing one-handed press-ups right now with his cuff ankle trekky bottoms, blowing a load of strawberry flavoured fog at you. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong.
I can't. It's impossible because you're right.
It's all facts. And I'm not referring to Jeremy Clarkson, but you can imagine if Clarkson did do all the things I've just described, and that would be quite a sight for TikTok. Yeah. Would it not? I'd absolutely love to see that.
Now, I had... a message from somebody, or we had a message from somebody, who explained what's going on with those broken BMW police cars.
Oh, interesting. Intel on the damaged police cars.
Like a true professional, I can't find the email.
Okay.
So that's... a bit annoying.
Well, don't worry. While you look, I was going to say, I had to go and have an operation last week.
I was going to ask, how is your arse?
It's okay. I mean, it is the first time I've spent a Valentine's Day having my jacksie fingered by a doctor. But
is it though?
No, yeah, it is. It genuinely okay, is. It might be the first and last. I don't know. But yeah,
do yourself down.
Well, so I had to have an operation and have a polyp removed from inside my colon, and it wasn't that bad actually. The inspection prior to Christmas, so I had an early Christmas present of having a sort of hose pipe maybe with a camera on the end smothered in goose fat wound into my backside. But the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because I probably should have got looked at much earlier than I did, and I'm not going to use the pandemic as an excuse for it, because really the pandemic, it was my problem, not the pandemic's problem. And I realised I was so occasionally seeing blood when I was going to the toilet and thinking that's not quite right. And do you know what? I'm annoyed with myself now, because I should have just got looked at by the doctor within weeks of that happening, or within days. But I didn't. I let it go on for probably about a year and a half. No, longer. Probably 2 years. And that's not great, especially seeing as my dad had cancer the same that way. So my wife, bless her, she nagged me for ages about it, and I was very blokey about it and just went, oh, I'm sure it's fine. I'm just stressed. I'm just tired or whatever. Anyway, let's think about something else. But no, I did it, and in the end, and they decided to remove some, like a growth, which I don't think was dangerous or anything, but it just shouldn't have been there. And so I wanted to say that I know a few people in much higher profile situations have advised people, men, to not be afraid to get checked out. Please go and get yourself checked out. It might not be, you might not be in any kind of sort of health danger, but at the same time, it's really not that bad. It's honestly not that bad. I was treated brilliantly. Got to say a massive thank you to the NHS. They did a really, really good job, and I felt great. And I had to take a dressing gown with me for on treatment day, so I picked my that white Audi Le Mans 24-hour dressing gown that I got free, and it's got, and it, did I tell you about it? It's got, the sleeves are slightly stained brown, where my wife might have used it to put fake tan on about 5 years ago. And so it looks like I've either been eating chocolate badly or worse. But so yeah, I did that, and I feel a lot better now. I feel a lot better for getting it off my chest and admitting that it was... I should have just bloody sorted it out sooner, really, on that sort of things.
But, so you're all right? You're going to be okay?
I think I'm going to be all right, yeah. They've taken it away for inspection. They obviously did a boroscope just before Christmas and realised that a couple of the tappets weren't quite right, and they were going to get some of the valve gear looked at, and then...
Need a couple of shims.
There was a 3.5 centimetre polyp in the way, and they had to just get that bad boy out. Then
3.5 centimetre.
It was, yeah.
Really?
Which I think's quite big, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was quite big. I kind of did that thing now when I'm talking to you and going, "Is that a golf ball? Is that?"
It's like, well, I always imagine it'd be like a sort of really big slug.
Yeah, it probably is a big slug. I mean, it was almost circular, looked like a sprout. Like a Christmas.
Was it circuit? Well, they showed it to you.
Yeah, I was watching the flat screen TV of them actually exploring my jacksie. For some reason, I didn't close my eyes. I know, I don't know why, but yeah.
Wow.
So I did. I actually watched it going on. The thing that absolutely, I'd say the worst part of the whole experience is you can't eat 24 hours beforehand, and you've got to take laxatives. And my dad did say to me, "Oh, have you had the depth charges yet?" And I didn't know what he meant, but yeah, this sachet was just, my word, yeah, proper, like, you know, if Karcher did medical enemas, I mean, it was this proper kind of, wow, okay. But
good. Well, look, I mean, I think that the, probably the audience for this podcast is what marketing people might call male skewing. I know we do have female listeners because
we do.
Few of them have been in touch whenever we mention this, in fact.
I'm so thankful for that. Sorry for all the detail.
Hey, I'm not a dude. But a lot of men, I would say, make up our audience. And so this is probably a little... It's a good opportunity to use this platform to go, men, stop being men and get things checked out. I did the same a few years ago, but I had it with my clackers where I found a lump. But didn't immediately go to the hospital or the doctor or whatever, just went, sure, it's nothing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's always something, and it's better to find out what that something is. Because exactly. In my case, it wasn't cancer in the end, but there was a brief period when I thought it might be.
Mm. And did it worry you?
A horrible thing with it. Yeah, well, it does, because particularly when you go to the doctor and they go, oh. And then they take it really, really seriously.
Yeah.
And I know the NHS gets a lot of flack from time to time, but... I think when it's at its most magnificence is when things are serious.
Exactly.
When they think they could be life-threatening and they swing into action. And because I remember they said to me, you need to come back in tomorrow. So we've got to investigate this further. And I went, oh, OK. They went, well, we haven't got any appointments. So I was like, all right, well, I won't come back tomorrow. I was feeling a sense of relief. And they went, no, you are coming back tomorrow. We will find time. And they got me...
Gosh, did they really? Well, and that, yeah. Well, that can be quite...
Because I'd left it so long that they couldn't be certain. They assumed it was a tumour, which it wasn't. It was a cyst, but they assumed the worst and they took immediate action. But that's after me putting it off for friggin' ages like a twat. So, yeah, men, don't be twats.
Well, well done you.
You and me.
Well, yeah, it's known that we're twats anyway, so I guess that's the news,
so,
is
yes.
it?
I mean, but it's good to have it sort of confirmed that medically speaking, we are twats as well.
Well, while they were up there with mine, I said, if you put a three-branch manifold on it and, full flow exhaust and, maybe a third injector and then we'll be sorted. We'll be stage three, won't we? Or maybe stage four.
Stage three, you've got stage three.
Right, stage three on it, on that side. Yeah, stage three.
All right, well, I've found the message from someone who's... in the police and has asked not to be named. But
really? Oh, brilliant.
And they said part of the problem is that the police, a lot of police forces, put all their eggs in one basket and moved to about 80 to 90% BMWs on their car fleet.
That's ridiculous.
There's a great cash cow for BMW, but they've screwed up. He says that the N57, for reasons unknown, seems to catch fire, something to do with the fuel system.
Oh my gosh.
Firewalls seem to crack at an alarming rate and were given a special brace in the workshop. And the gearbox seizes at speed, which makes you poo, he says, a little.
What?
And the extra battery fitted seems to add a load onto the electrics, which causes them to catch fire.
And this sounds like a terrible idea for a cop car.
I know, this is awful, isn't it? Anyway, and this is from someone at the sharp end, so no reason to doubt this if they are who they say are. But... they go on to say that the cars aren't ragged as such, but a lot of the wear is 0 to 100 to 0, not from pursuits, which are rare, but from going after speeders from a standstill. So I suppose, because we were speculating on what could cause it.
Right.
And it is, I guess, sitting idling and then absolutely ragging up to high speed and then down again. This person says that there's not enough tea in China to make them buy an ex-traffic car.
Oh, okay.
They get damaged all the time in tactical contact.
Well, that's because we don't put blimmin' ball bars on the front, which is one of the few things that Americans do that I think is a great idea. Which is actually, listen, perps know that the front end of any modern car is a weak spot, so therefore they willingly goad you into crunching into them and stuff.
Yeah. Also we were saying, oh, they don't tune up police cars, that's bollocks. And this person also says traffic cars are not tuned, never have been really. A few were. The Focus STs years back were given the mount tune pack, which was an official Ford pack, so that's what I mean. They don't want anything that will screw your warranty.
Yep.
It's got to be something that's been through factory approval procedures, but he says they blew up. So
did they really?
That did it, yeah. And then apparently the only other one is the Volvos. Some of the newer Volvos have been given the Polestar map, which again I think is an official modification, and that's just because out of the factory they're really slow. So BMW are now insisting that the police cars are fully serviced every 8,000 miles on the nail. So the cars are constantly out of service.
I feel like other car manufacturers need to step in now and do some sort of guerrilla advertising and just keep
giving extra long test periods for other. I want to, and also I want to see some other models of car on the road.
Yeah, I think that's we're just for people who are interested in cars. It's interesting to see, but you do with plain clothes. Well, actually, you know something else that this our police spec. Person here says? You don't get plain clothes or undercover cars. We just call them unmarked cars. So we've marked ourselves out as no nothings there. But and you don't get pursuit spec either. They're just 530s. For a few years, basically the police had SE spec with cloth seats and no nav, but with M Sport brakes and suspension.
Oh, what a lovely spec. Well, lovely, lovely, cheeky little spec that. So, what do we think the police should have, rather than BMWs? What should they be tooling around in right now, in the UK? Alfa Romeos, Quadrifoglios. Yeah, with actual quad fog lights on the front. You know, there's yellow kind of like foreign spec fogs.
Like on that new-ish BMW M5 CS has got yellow.
Yeah.
DRLs, except they're not allowed to be yellow in the daytime. They're only yellow when you put the headlights on, apparently.
That's exactly. Exactly that. So Alpha should just step in and go, right, here we go. Let's do this. It could be cool.
I'm wondering, because the police have lots of requirements, don't they? Including we talked about this before. Like, remember I said ages ago, have you ever been in a narrow corridor with a police person? They're really bulky. They're just kit they wear now. Yeah. They're just like kind of like bizarre superhuman people because they just seem to be kind of much bulkier than a natural human being would be. And it's all the kit they have sort of tied to them. So you can't, because I remember that may be why Clarkson didn't buy the Alpha, because the one criticism he had of it is that somehow the front door aperture is too small. Have you found this? That it's a sort of awkward car to get into?
Oh, interesting. I have got into it in tight parking spaces a lot over the last 2 days because people keep parking too close to me. And you know you have to do that shimmy thing where you don't want to damage the door paint on the edge, the leading edge.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also had a drink with me and a coat and it was very stormy weather. I didn't want the door to fling open any more than I was. Yeah. It was actually quite stressful. I found it to be quite stressful. So when I got back to the car the second time and someone had moved, and there was no one next to me, I was like, oh, thank goodness for that. That's good. Yeah, maybe, maybe. I think the boot opens very aggressively. If you had your chin, if you had your face sort of leaning over the boot lid, because it's obviously a saloon, it flicks up fast, like a boxer doing an uppercut.
I seem to remember a story from the launch of, I think, the Saab 9-3. Do you remember when the one that went to the last one basically before Saab went bust. When it became a saloon.
Yes.
It was sort of quite a nice car.
It was.
I'm sure it was from a story from the launch of that they realised as they were launching the car to the world's media that the springs on the boot release were too powerful because a journalist got cuffed under the chin by it.
Got knocked out.
And they made some modifications in production to make it less aggressive. I think I remember that story. Don't quote me on it. But I did just want to finish. So we've actually had two messages from police people. The first person who I was just reading out their message, they concluded what they said with, it's been noticed that BMW are chucking spec at the cop cars now in an effort to stop Volvo and Audi nosing back in.
But I don't want them to chuck spec at it. I want them to chuck sort of policey, secrety things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't need like extra jingle and extra jangle. I want proper, purposeful police. At the end of the day, and if you see an X5 going by, it needs to be able to carry 300 road cones and go 0-60 quicker than a civilian one. That's what I want, though, a police car. So,
but I think that's why certain cars which you think might be policey can't, because they haven't got the payload to carry incredibly bulky police people plus cones plus whatever else they need to carry that... I don't know.
Maybe police themselves have got bulkier because of the unreliability of the BMWs they're travelling in. So they carry around a fire extinguisher, a very large one, in one holster, like a very large holster. And then they carry around like an OBD reader in one in their breast pocket.
Just in case. Just getting while you're sitting by the side of the road, just watching traffic, just do a quick OBD check, make sure nothing.
Give it a flash map or whatever that means.
So we did have this is the message that I wanted to read out. That this was from another police officer who I won't name. He says officers are now told not to idle BMWs unnecessarily, as this used to be common practice at scenes where emergency lighting was needed to warn road users of an incident. The engine needed to run as the battery would be flattened due to the lights being on for a prolonged time. Now officers switch off the engines, but are finding when they return to the vehicles the batteries are flat.
Why don't they just have a lithium-ion, extra lithium-ion
well,
pack?
I know, it seems weird. It just seems I guess like maybe if you're sitting there for a long time, I mean, you know, sometimes you're clearing up the scene of an accident. I imagine you're there for a long time, aren't you?
Yeah.
But even so. They go on to say, the issue is that following long periods of idling, the oil becomes really thin and not properly lubricating the bottom end. And it's then causing the crank bearings to fail if the car is then used to respond to the next incident.
Yeah.
In some extreme cases, the cranks have then broken and hot oil has burst into flames as the block then rods itself, spitting the oil into the undertray.
Oh, my gosh. Some
BMW have now put in place a strict service interval, which is what our other contact was saying, and if any vehicle goes over the schedule by even 0.01 of a mile, BMW won't continue the warranty.
What?
Officers have regularly been told not to exceed 90 miles an hour while BMW are looking for a solution.
Oh, my gosh, so all of this is being revealed, right? If there's a criminal listening to Smith & Sniff podcast, they're going to know that, like, they can outwit a BMW response vehicle because there's so many parameters in place.
What's interesting is this person goes on to say that that forces are actually binning off BMW and Audi vehicle contracts, which I guess leaves Volvo, because I don't think that JLR are particularly into the police game anymore, are they? I don't really see.
No,
I felt like I used to see
shame.
Sort of XFs and Discoveries, but not so much.
I actually
think Discoveries actually were the highway officers, weren't they? They weren't even proper police. But
yeah, I think an I-Pace would be a fantastic thing for the job.
I think interior is probably a bit cramped. And the range thing might be an issue, I don't know.
Well, can't you just sculpt it all out? Go, oh, hang on, there's a shortage of semiconductors and other chips and things. Why don't you just tear it all out? Just have it really bare bones. Have no back seat. So if you have to arrest someone and take them away, you call for another backup.
Just have to lie down in the back. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah, something like that would be ideal. Yeah.
Our other police listener concludes their email with catching crims, perps and shits is our number one priority.
Brilliant.
So that's reassuring.
I love
sort of
you,
mission
listeners.
Statement there for the police. Our listeners are great. Well, thank you to both of those listeners who I won't name for
legal
for
reasons.
Giving us a little bit of for legal reasons.
Legal reasons.
but thanks for the intel. It's always good to know. We should probably wrap this up.
Yeah.
But
I don't want to, but we have to, really, don't we?
Well, I'll be honest, I've got a cold and I feel a bit rank. So anyway, before I start moaning about minor ailments, I've got three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show. You probably know that by now. Mm. Some excellent vids on there recently. The Ford Sierra Barn Find is a cracker. And you've got a new idle chat up as well now, haven't you?
Got a new idle chat up with the man that cheated death, who's a most successful British superbike rider of all time, yeah, Shane Byrne, who's got some amazing car stories involving Pagani Zonda head gaskets and all sorts. Yeah, go and have a
Pagani
watch.
Pagani Zonda head gaskets?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet.
It's not a John Peel session, thing. I promise.
No. Three more from them later. The second thing I've got to tell you is I've got various books out. One of them is called Boring Car Trivia Volume 2, the sort of bastard stepchild of those books, because I rarely mention it, but I think it holds its own with the others in the trilogy, so please go and buy that, either as a paperback or an ebook from Amazon, or you can get the paperback from the Late Break Show merch shop.
Oh, yeah.
There's other Smith & Sniff items of merch as well. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that the least populous US state is Wyoming. Just a population of 576,000 people, that's all. But it's the ninth largest state, just under 98,000 square miles. So it's bigger than the UK.
Gosh.
And it has barely over 500,000 people live there. I looked this up. The nearest UK city in size is Glasgow, which has a population of 591,000 thereabouts. So that's like the population of Glasgow having the whole of the UK to themselves.
I really want to go to Wyoming now.
I know, I do as well, because you go, wow, I bet it's really spacious.
Really spacious. Maybe it's the jewel. Maybe it's the coolest state. It's just no one's given it the time of day.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, I had to check on a map to see where it is because I was a bit hazy about, is it up there? It's up there. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We should go sometime.
We should.
It sounds roomy and luxurious.
Let's buy a really
boggy, baggy Mercury Marauder and cruise around it for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Can we do that?
Yes. Okay.
Please.
That's
thank you.
One day, you and me, Butch. Okay. Well, thank you ever so much for listening. And we will do this all again next week. Until then, goodbye.
Bye-bye. Welcome to Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which we talk about fog lights and bottom holes.
You could almost call your bottom hole your fog light, though.
You could actually. What, your quadrifoglio, your single foglio? Yeah.